So it gives me great pleasure to extend an enthusiastic welcome to our guest speaker, Martin Settle. As many of you know, Martin is co-executive director of the Unitarian Service Committee. Later, he will be discussing key aspects of the Seeds of Survival program and related work in his homily on Seeds and Stories of Change. Originally from rural Alberta, Martin currently lives in Osgoode, Ontario. From my memory, I think that's also rural, so he must like the rural countryside. He's there with his partner, Kate, and two boys, Jamie and Noah. And from what I understand, they've been out seal hunting, but don't worry, it's only with cameras, from what I understand. So, very briefly, then, Martin has two decades of experience in social justice work, focusing mainly on youth, food sovereignty, and social housing. Martin is a chartered professional accountant, having gained these credentials after recognizing the need within the key social justice agencies. Accordingly, in 2009, he was recruited to serve as the USC Canada Board Treasurer. In 2013, he became Director of Finance and Human Resources and subsequently took on the additional role of Deputy Executive Director, with increased oversight of the organization's award-winning International Seeds of Survival program. His work with the USC has included field visits to the birthplace of the Seeds of Survival program. That's Ethiopia, and forgive me if I mispronounce some of these foreign city names, but as well, he's been to Burkina Faso, Mali, Timor-Leste, and Bangladesh. I encourage you to find out more about the USC and Martin's role there on the Unitarian Service Committee website. So here in Victoria, this slowly emerging wet warmth of March is energizing and waking the astonishingly beautiful, complex, and endlessly interdependent life that flows into amazing forms all around us and indeed within us too. This web of life, of course, is our sacred legacy, handed down over billions of years from an impossible-to-comprehend event we generally refer to as the Big Bang. We might be compelled to think of this, our true beginning, as a kind of overarching sprouting event that continues even to this day, one that has carried us ever forward to our present level of complexity and conscious awareness. But it is no idle speculation that our full emergence as a species to a more supportive and enlightened role within that web here on Earth is not complete. In that regard, the longer perspective would surely reveal that our species is in a clear path to improvement, despite the obvious bumps or trumps or however you want to pronounce that. Many intelligent people serve to guide us on that path, and none more mindful and poignant, perhaps, than Buddhist, I guess you'd call him clergyman and philosopher, Thich Nhat Hanh, who states, "When we recognize the virtues, the talent, the beauty of Mother Earth, something is born in us, some kind of connection. Love is born." So today, as you listen to our speakers, I invite you to reflect on the virtues, the talent, and the beauty that is carried and expressed not only in the earth and in their words, but also in the words of our speakers, that is, but also inside every seed. Treasured and protected, these seeds give rise to hope and to just about everything else we know. So now I call upon Christine Johnston to light our chalice, and Faye will follow with a much appreciated story for all of us.
So I have three things I want you to consider today. One is a big treasure box filled with gold. One is a great stash of weapons, spears and crossbows and things like that. No, because it was before then. It was before guns, this story. And then the third thing is a great big barrel full of seeds. And I want you to think about which of those three things is the most powerful. You think of weapons? There is a thought. Somebody thinks seeds? What about that gold? Well, I'll tell you a story from a long time ago in the south of France. There was a city-state called Carcassonne. And you can still go there today and see the castle that's up on the top of the hill. And that castle was surrounded by homes and fields. And then all around this small city was a wall. And there were many city-states like this, and they tended to get into war now and then. And that is what happened. There was another kingdom that decided they wanted to take over Carcassonne. Her dad works at a castle. I think it will be a little bit different than this castle where people were still, well, in feudal times. So an invading army came and they tried to take over Carcassonne. But even though they had a lot of weapons with them, a lot of spears and crossbows, they could not penetrate the wall. And the people on the inside couldn't seem to chase the enemy away either. So the enemy said, all right, we'll set up camp outside the city. We'll just wait until they have no more food, and then they'll have to give up. They'll have to come out. So they set up camp, and they waited. A week went by. Months went by. Several months went by. Inside the castle wall, or the city-state walls, it's true, people were becoming very miserable. It was dreary to be stuck inside, and they were starting to get hungry, too. Some of them began to say, let's surrender, let's give up. We can't eat. You might have a lot of gold in your treasures, king, but we can't eat it. We need more food. There were more and more rumblings of surrender, but then there was an elderly woman who said, wait a minute, I have an idea. She said, we need seeds. Seeds, they said. Yeah, bring me your seeds. We need as many seeds as we can get. Any kind of grain, any kind of seeds you have. Please pour them in this bushel container. Well, the people went to their houses and kind of reluctantly, because this was their last food, their last hope for the future, and they poured them in this bushel container. She said, and now we need a cow. A cow? People said, we don't have any cows left. It had been so long that most of the animals had been eaten. But there was somebody down windy lane in a small stable that had an old cow. And they brought the cow forward. I said, well, what now? She said, well, let's feed the cow. Well, what do you think the people thought? Are you crazy? No, she said. Feed the cow. She had a good reputation as being wise, so they agreed. And then, to their amazement, they watched as when night came, she went down to the city gate and she opened the door just a little. What was she doing? Sure enough, the cow found its way to the city gate. It could maybe smell greener pastures outside the city walls, and it went right outside. Do you think she was wise?
Yeah.
You think so? Oh, good. Well, she was, because in the morning, the invading army found the cow, and they, too, were very hungry. So they butchered the cow, and when they saw what was inside the cow's stomach, it was full of seeds, full of grain. They said, oh my, if they can afford to feed their animals grain still, they must have tons of food. We can't starve them out. They've got tons to eat and they'll be able to plant whole new crops. I think we better give up. And so the army went home. The army went home and the city was safe again. Because, of course, seeds are the most powerful.
We plant seeds in the garden and we grow.
Did you hear that? You plant seeds in the garden and then they grow. It's the future. It's the hope. Thank you for listening, everyone. And let us form the arches and we'll make our way out. Good morning.
So this month is the beginning of our How project for this year, How 2017. We've done dozens of projects over the last 12 years. We've built houses, we've done solar panels, we've done all sorts of things. This year we have quite an amazing project. We have just one project to fund this year, and it's really an interesting intersection of taboos, cultural practices, and the rights of girls and women. When I was in Africa a few years ago, I met a woman that I became quite friendly with, and she'd taken in four of her sister's children, who she had died of AIDS. And she had three boys and one girl, and we were just talking about, you know, the boys and their rambunctiousness. And she said, well, the most difficult one that I have is my niece. And it's not because of her. It's because she really wants to go to school. And we're having a really hard time with her going to school. And I said, oh, doesn't she like it? And, oh, no, she really loves going to school. But she had just started menstruating about a year before. And the taboos there are women may not leave their house when they're menstruating. She lived in a village, so she had to live in a little hut. And she couldn't leave. They didn't. And so she'd moved into Blantyre in Malawi, which is a bigger city, and she just wouldn't leave. And then she would fall behind, and she'd be really self-conscious about it. And so she was just not wanting to go to school. It was one of those problems that, you know, as somebody parachuting into a culture, you just go, wow, you know. Not much. I just had no idea what to do. Well, this project this year does exactly that. Help Lesotho is a registered Canadian charity. And their project that we're funding this year is to give 100 girls from 50 girls from two different schools in grade 7 washable menstrual pads. They will then be able to go to school. They will get 2 days of, they will join together and get 2 days of education on contraception, on health, on all sorts of things. They will be given this product and it'll allow them, they figure it'll probably last about 3 years and then they will get more. So these girls now will be able to go to school. No one will know that they're menstruating. There's no shame. There's no anything involved. And the other wonderful part about this is that these are made in a neighboring village. So there's women that are getting training to sew, and they also, and it's going to be a never-ending project, as you can imagine. So I think this is an astounding project on so many different levels. Simple, very simple, but changes the lives of these girls and women. So if you need more information, Nada, are you here now? There she is. She's waving over there. We'll be at the table, in the SRC table in the hallway. Margot Lodds and Nada are both bringing this project forward. So please help this project this year. It's quite an amazing one. Thank you.
I now invite everyone present to reflect in silent stillness, to meditate on the values, the benefits, the capabilities, and the sacred beauty that surrounds us on planet Earth. In our own reflection, please notice the special connection between you, other beings, and the natural world, that place of fidelity where love is born.
Thank you for the invitation to join with you and speak to you this morning. I was just saying to Sylvia before we started that speaking in Unitarian churches always feels a little bit like me to coming home. And it's actually enhanced a bit. I just want to take a brief moment to just say that Sylvia Crow, in the front row here, was actually one of the teachers in my high school in Edmonton. And in back in 1989, 1990, I was one of the first members of the Environment Action Group that she started in the school. And together we started the first paper recycling program in any public school in Edmonton. I was just reflecting on how I walked into my hotel room last night and there's a composting bucket on the counter. You know, we've come a long way, but there's still a long way to go. I know that many of you probably know USC Canada, and probably many of you have actually known about USC Canada for even much longer than I have. USC Canada, which for many years was known as the Unitarian Service Committee of Canada, was born out of a marriage between the global justice values of the Unitarian community and the drive and the commitment of a Jewish refugee from World War II, the late Dr. Lotta Hitchmanova. For years, Dr. Lotta nurtured this child in her own all-consuming fashion. Starting from its original work of supporting orphans and rehabilitation efforts in post-war Europe, and gradually expanding its scope to other parts of the world and other types of work, the Unitarian Service Committee became one of Canada's most respected international development agencies. And, with Lotta's distinctive voice and nearly ever-present voice, speaking to Canadians over the radio, the USC 56 Spark Street, Ottawa 4, also became, for a time, Canada's best-known NGO, and it was both a beacon of and a model for the international concern of Canadians. Well, as with any child, growing up brought strain in relationships and sometimes stress between parents. By 1948, all the formal connections between the Unitarian Church and the Unitarian Service Committee had actually ended, and the USC was operating independently, though with considerable support from individual Unitarians and also from individual Unitarian congregations. In 1978, the Unitarian Service Committee of Canada registered under a new legal name, simply USC Canada, which actually results in our most frequently asked question, what does USC stand for? I like to think that we're all grown up now. And as with many grown children, I believe it's time for USC Canada to reach out to our parents, to the Unitarian community, and seek to renew that relationship. Not because we want to live in your basement, mind you. But because the values that inspire us came from you. I'm always surprised, humbled, and reinvigorated by the overlap between USC Canada's values and those of the Unitarian community. In June of last year, I had the opportunity to attend the Canadian Unitarian Conference at UBC in Vancouver. At that conference, the Unitarian Council presented its revised vision and mission. As Canadian Unitarian Universalists, we envision a world in which our interdependence calls us to love and justice. When I read that, projected for the first time on the screen at the opening of the conference, I felt at home. Personally and professionally, that vision and mission connects with who we as USC Canada are and what we do. Your vision and mission is informed by the seven principles of Universal Unitarianism. As a person of a searching faith myself, my own background is actually in the radical left of the United Church. I find motivation and meaning in all seven of those principles. As an organization, USC Canada is motivated primarily by tenets 1, 2, and 7. We share your belief in the inherent worth and dignity of every person, in justice, equity, and compassion in human relations, and in respect for the interdependent web of all existence for which we are a part. Those principles have been at the very root of our work right from the beginning. As part of my preparation for this speech, I happened to listen to some of Lotta's old radio messages. She spoke of a belief in self-determination and independence, which is really the dignity of every person, which is lived out in USC Canada's working through local leadership and local partners. She spoke of countering inequity and expressing compassion, lived out in USC Canada's program of collecting and distributing material aid and providing access to health services and education. She spoke in each and every broadcast of the interdependent web. Charity begins at home, indeed it does. And then it goes on to embrace next door neighbors and all those who need help. So start by caring for those near you, and then give a thought, and if you can, a dollar, to the children far away who have no hope without your help. Well, over time, certain things change. USC Canada moved from working in Western Europe into Greece, and then into the Baltics, then Korea, other countries in Asia, Southern and West Africa, and then in 1989, Ethiopia. Ethiopia is the only African nation not to fall to European colonization. It's the center of origin for wheat and barley, and the source of genetic material that ultimately helped Europe and North America survive a wheat rust epidemic. It's a proud nation that until the 1980s, few in North America knew anything about. And then drought. Year after year of drought. We saw the pictures. Canadians heard that tears are not enough, and we responded. We responded with a charity unseen in history. Millions raised, grain shipped, famine confronted, lives were saved, but underneath, the damage was done. On the farms of northern Ethiopia, there was no seed left. Year after year of crop failure had consumed the last of the farmers' own seeds. So even as the rains came, rain rather than snow, even as that rain came to nourish the fields, there was no hope that the famine could end, because there was no seed to sow in the ground. But Ethiopia had something that few countries at the time could claim. The Ethiopian Biodiversity Institute, which had been founded only in 1976, had for a decade been collecting and storing small samples of farmers' seeds in a national gene bank. These small reserves, which had been stored mostly for scientific research, ended up being an answer to many prayers. The director of the Biodiversity Institute, Dr. Malaku Warede, immediately began working to redistribute the seeds to farmers. But in doing so, he recognized a problem. It takes a very, very long time to take 80 grams of seed, a standard sample size, and multiply it into enough seed to distribute to thousands of farmers. Storing seeds far from farmers in a freezer vault is not, it turns out, a particularly efficient backup method. So in the spring of 1989, accompanied by Pat Mooney, a Canadian that he had met at UN biodiversity meetings, Dr. Malaku knocked on a door at 56 Spark Street. And Seeds of Survival was born. Working with USC Canada, Dr. Malaku and the farmers in Ethiopia envisioned a new way of promoting local resilience. We established community seed banks and farmer conservator associations, which work to protect and to expand the genetic diversity of seeds available to and in use by the local community. The seed banks, in the process, became centers of community leadership, gathering points for learning and empowerment, and models for other communities and countries. Through the 1990s, the Seeds of Survival team in Ethiopia trained up practitioners from around the world, and the work was replicated elsewhere, including within other USC Canada programs. Then, in 1998, Hurricane Mitch ripped through Honduras. Peasant farmers who'd been forced out of the fertile valleys by export plantations lost livelihoods and lives as their steep hillside farms collapsed in landslides. Researchers from the University of Guelph had been working with farmers in the area and, recognizing the urgent need for new methods, requested USC Canada's help. We brought the Seeds of Survival program to Honduras, and for the first time in our then 50-year history, USC Canada started working in Latin America. And each place the program goes, it takes on a different focus. It's adapted by and for the local leadership. In Honduras, the focus of the program is on breeding new varieties to address local challenges and on researching new methods of agricultural practice to make farming more sustainable. More sustainable both in terms of those steep hillside farms, but also more sustainable environmentally and for the farmers themselves financially. So in 2007, the Board of USC Canada undertook a strategic review and visioning. Of all of the work that we were doing, healthcare, education, water systems, Seeds of Survival, of all of the challenges that presented themselves in the world, the board, staff, and the USC partners together decided that the Seeds of Survival mandate of generating local agricultural resilience was the most important thing that USC Canada could do. So at that time, we decided to focus exclusively on promoting agricultural biodiversity through the Seeds of Survival program. I wasn't around at the time. I've only heard stories of the difficult decision-making process. It did mean that partnerships ended, that programs ended. But I do know that it was carefully considered, and always at the core was the question of how best to live out the values that are at the core of USC Canada's work, the values best expressed by Principles 1, 2, and 7 of Unitarian Universalism. The challenge that exists for any actor in the grand mission of generating global justice is that there's simply so much to be done. I'm sure each of you have experienced it. How many emails do you get with requests to sign petitions on endless important topics? How often have you had to decide which critical campaigns or issues of justice are most important for your time? USC Canada had to decide. Engaging in a deep way on resilient, biodiverse agriculture requires a specialization and an expertise that's beyond the reach of a generalist organization. When we chose to engage in a deep way, we committed to developing that expertise and specialization. So now, our daily conversation is filled with fun lingo, like participatory varietal selection, open pollination, segregation distance, hybridization, micronutrient density, germination potential, ex situ and in situ conservation, gene activation, agroecology. The list goes on. But on our team, this conversation is backed up by expert staff, including people who hold doctorates in plant genetics, agricultural economics, and anthropology. In order to be able to have a really strong, value-driven impact We've had to be focused. And USC Canada is having an impact. The farmer associations in Ethiopia, who are managing those USC Canada-supported seed banks, have been better able to withstand the last 2 years of drought. I hope you've heard that there's once again a drought in Ethiopia. Those of our partners and communities who have found themselves in crisis have also found that through those networks of farmer associations, they have access to support and to seeds from other seed banks within Ethiopia. In Honduras, USC Canada-supported farmer research groups have bred new varieties of drought-tolerant beans, and they've registered 7 of them for broader distribution. In Bangladesh, young women farmers have systems for marketing homegrown vegetables, earning an income that allows them to remain in their rural community and not have to seek employment in the garment factories. In Mali, farmers are testing varieties of millet from the northern desert region in the south as climate change causes the traditional varieties in that region to fail. Here in Canada, farmers are accessing heritage seeds from our own Canadian gene bank, which is based in Saskatoon. They're testing and selecting varieties for breeding, and they're building up a capacity to supply larger quantities of locally adapted organic seed to Canadian farmers. All of these things help to spread love and justice. But at the same time, those values that drive us to engage in a deep way on resilient, biodiverse agriculture keep pulling us back to wanting broader system change, more global justice. There are lots of important issues that need to be addressed. LGBTQ rights, economic disparity, pipelines, refugees and immigration, weapons manufacturing and export, domestic violence, indigenous self-determination, and more. All of these are important to the USC Canada community, and yet they can only be impacted in a minor way by the focus of our work. I have to admit, it has seemed like an existential challenge for us. We are at our very roots a justice-seeking organization. And for 10 years, it feels we've almost been apologetic about our narrow focus on resilient agriculture and just food systems. There's been times when confronted by that most frequently asked question that I've been tempted to reply, USC stands for all that is good, for love and justice, for the dignity of the person and for the interdependence of all life. It is true, but at the same time, it feels too broad when all we do is resilient farming. I think that we may have forgotten in the midst of that existential confusion that we are also, as Lotta started us, a partnership organization. That partnership extends not only to those who support and implement our work, like our international partners, like Vancouver's Farm Folk City Folk or Organic Alberta, like Life Cycles here in Victoria, but also to those who seek justice on other mandates. We are in partnership with the wider international NGO community in Canada, with Oxfam, Interperez, CARE, CUSO, Help Lesotho, and more. We are in partnership as well with the environmental movement, with David Suzuki Foundation, Greenpeace, Tides Canada, and more. We're in partnership with human rights actors, with Amnesty International, with Pride associations, and particularly here in Canada with First Nations communities. I think we are, most importantly, in partnership with you, with the community that birthed USC Canada into the world, and who continues to live and express the values that inspire us. And so I stand before you as representative of that prodigal child of Unitarian Universalism, USC Canada, to offer our partnership and to request yours. A just world cannot be created by ourselves alone. We need your support, not just in terms of financial support, which is, of course, always necessary and appreciated, but also in terms of your own justice-making. We are together only part of an even wider movement for change, a movement that seeks to spread love and justice. Even where we are not doing the same thing, we are partners and we are allies. We need each other to do our own parts. I hope that in your work, in whatever you are doing to spread love and justice, you can know and trust that USC Canada is with you, even as we know you are with us. So next time I'm asked, what does USC Canada stand for? I am going to reply, USC Canada stands for all that is good, for love and justice, for the dignity of the person, and for the interdependence of all life. It's heartening to know that as parent and grown child, we stand together. The seeds of love and justice are spread by our solidarity. So I'd invite you to visit the USC Canada table and myself after the service. Ask questions or pick up more information about how we're working in the world. Sign up for our email list if you aren't already on it. I'm happy to discuss ways that you can support us, either financially or otherwise. But even if our particular focus isn't yours at the moment, take pride in knowing that our work is the result of faith expressed by members of the Unitarian community. And take pride in knowing that your faith expressed today can still change the world. So thank you again for this opportunity to join you and for the love and justice that you spread.
Members of this congregation have been actively supporting USC initiatives over the past 10 years. Lisa Greenlee, for example, led a team several years ago which spearheaded Healing Our World, or HOW, project in aid of USC, and this served to educate the congregation about their work. Also, the SRC Environmental Action Team, or EAT, has promoted the USC works on many a CD Saturday. Finally, Christine Johnston has been deservedly invited on several occasions, and I guess we're very lucky for that, to visit three of their village development projects in Nepal, and she was very impressed. And I've asked Christine to say a few closing words.
Today we have pondered what is of worth, which is the meaning of worship. What is of worth? We came together to share our deepest concerns about the seeds of the world, hearing how one excellent organization spreads inspiration and hope. We ourselves are committed to modest things to ease the burden of those who suffer, those who struggle to find seeds for their survival, for those who work to support their community with wisdom and passion. Thank you for your inspiring words, Martin. Last month, we collected a small token in our Share the Plate, but that is but a small token of how much we admire your work. May we be inspired to put our concerns into action, pondering your message of today. Let us go thoughtfully into this coming week until we meet again. Blessed be.